They can be in the hall or somewhere.
Okay. I had a something else I wanted to do, but let me see if we can get through this first. She's not feeling good. Okay, so now these are the ways that we can repair a wrong view. So the first one, say tesum. Second one, nepa. Tesum and nepa. So tesum is doubt. Nepa is to positively identify something or certainty. And this implies, if there's ways to repair a wrong view, this implies that you can restore previously damaged virtuous seeds to full potential. So the tesum, or doubt, there's good and bad doubt. So what do you think this is here?
Good and bad doubt?
It's one, which one do you think it is, this doubt we're talking about?
Probably good.
Yeah, so you're having a good doubt that your previous wrong view is incorrect. So
you're having doubt about the wrong view.
You're doubting the wrong view. You're doubting that that wrong view, not incorrect, you're doubting that that wrong view is correct. So basically you doubt your wrong view. You think, maybe karma is correct, actually. Maybe a bodhisattva could be anybody. And it often, people who go through great suffering or who are getting old get tesum. So, you know, you start to think that, oh my gosh, maybe karma is actually real. Maybe things are working like that. Maybe everything that's happening is based on seeds that I planted. And you'll see people who are going through a huge struggle will be attracted to the Dharma too. And sometimes they stay, and sometimes when things get better, they just leave. And if you're around Diamond Light enough, you see it happen over and over. So this is enough to reconnect you with the good karma. This is why it's important to keep that healthy skepticism. So maybe it's more like what Abhidharma seems to be saying is that the good karma is unfrozen. Like cutting the root of virtue, or with the wrong view, you froze all the good seeds. And then with the right view, you unfreeze them. And then nepa is having certainty that your wrong view is wrong, and to positively identify correct view is correct. So having a correct perception about it with certainty. There is karma, I'm sure of it, I know it. And if you say something like that out loud or to yourself, you can feel that there's a power to it. And in a way, we live in a world where we so strongly think that everything's coming from outside, and that other people are doing things to us and other things are doing things to us. Even through studying this, it takes us a long time for it to sink in. That in a way, I think it's hard for us to think that we can purify anything. And it takes some practice, if that comes up for you, to get to the point where you give it enough time that you can feel it being purified, and you start to get more faith as you practice it more. Because there's some way where we think, how is me doing the four powers going to do anything? It's just my mind, or, you know, my awareness, my thoughts, that sort of thing that I'm working with. But that's the same thing that plants the karmic seeds. It's our awareness. It's not the awareness of somebody else. No one else is planting seeds for us. No one else can purify for us. No one else can walk the path to enlightenment for us. So if they could, if the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas could do it for us, they would have done it a long time ago, because they love us and care about us so much. It would be just masochistic, or I don't know if that's the right word. It would be sick for them to do that. And it would be completely against their nature if they were able to help us and they didn't. So if they could have, they would have by now. But they can't. We're the only ones that can do it for ourselves. And then also, at the same time, which the spiritual path is filled with these paradoxes, at the same time that we're the only one can do it, if we have the karmic seeds, then we can also get help from maybe our teacher as we feel them at our heart, or when we go and talk to them, or from some angel or deity that comes to us in a meditation. But it still doesn't exist as something out there coming at us, which does not mean it doesn't exist at all. It just means that it exists in a different way than we think that it does. It's all from our karmic seeds. And there's people and things that are here, you know, out there, not as in out there coming at me, but that are real and that exist. You know, there's other people with their own mind streams, that sort of thing. So, okay, let's go over the dividends of karma. They're so cute. Mm-hmm.
And that's a big
back one. Because we're going to, when we talk about the completing or finishing karma.
Mm-hmm.
So cute.
I'm the cutest kid.
Uh-huh. So say Penje Kile.
Penje Kile.
And Zokje Kile.
Zokje Kile.
Penje Kile.
Penje Kile.
Zokje Kile.
Zokje Kile.
Okay, the first is projecting karma. The second is completing or finishing karma. I think these are fun. I like these. So the projecting karma projects your whole next life. The time you're born, which of the six realms you're going to be born in, if you're an animal or a human, etc., etc. It basically throws you to your next rebirth. And the projecting karma is the most powerful or strong karma through your whole life. So that's the one that's likely to come up and project you to your next rebirth. So kind of like the strongest theme through your whole life, if there's one that you can see, or one habit that comes up all the time that's really strong. And this projects you to your next rebirth. It projects you to the bardo and determines your bardo body and the next rebirth. And only one karma can do a Penje Kile. It's not a group of karma together. Depending how strong your anger is and the object, that will depend or make the stronger karma or the not so strong karma. So if you have anger over and over and over towards a powerful object, and this is the most destructive emotion, which all of us have this, all of us have anger in some form very, very often. It's why it's talked about over and over. We may think that we don't, but we do, even if it's just to the point of like a subtle irritation. So this argument isn't completely accepted by anyone else. This is the Abhidharma, the Vaibhashika school, or the Vaibhashika system. So they say your whole life has a consistency to it. You're an animal your whole life, or you're a human your whole life. Therefore, it has to be projected by one karma. It's not that you're an animal for 3 weeks and then a human for 4 weeks or something like that. And in the bardo, it's too late because you already look like where you're headed. So the bardo is kind of like the in-between between this life and the next life. It's one penje kile that throws the bardo and the next rebirth. It's a whole lifetime of being stingy and greedy and gluttonous, and the result is that you're born as a preta or a hungry ghost where you want to eat and you can't get any nutrients. Either your throat's so skinny that you can't even swallow anything, or when you start to eat something, it turns into blood and pus, or just terrible. You're never, never satisfied. So from the moment you die and all through your next life, it's one karma slowly releasing its effect. And then the Dzogchen Kile, so cute. The completing or finishing karma decides the details that complete the karma of the next life. The projecting karma determines the overall type of life, and then the finishing karma determines all the details, like whether you're rich, poor, accidents that happen, that sort of thing. So you can think of the Penje Kile as the master painter who sketches out the painting, and then the apprentices come in and fill in the colors and that sort of thing. And that's the finishing karma. According to Abhidharma, do you have one karma doing the Dzogchen Kile? Or many? What do you think? Yep. You can think of it as a bunch of apprentices filling in the color. The Penje Kile is only one karma, but the Dzogchen Kile is many karmas.
I'm not sure. What do you mean? Like, is that projecting karma what decides that one karma? Is that the one that was just the strongest in this lifetime?
Uh-huh.
And then
the Dzogchen Kile is kind of like a bunch of little karmas filling in the details. Like, I was angry most of the time in my life. And then I was also greedy. And I was also giving sometimes. And then they're just smaller ones that are filling in the details from the bigger picture. Does that make sense? So, we studied the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and according to traditional Buddhist scholars, it's actually defective. So, what the Tibetan Book of the Dead is talking about, basically on the worst day of your life, the worst 5 minutes of your life, when you die, you're usually in terrible pain. You'll only be able to practice what you've been doing your whole life. So because of the breakdown of your cells and nerves and whatever else is happening, you can't even sustain a clear thought. So it's very unlikely at the time of death to be able to meditate clearly enough to get out of suffering. So don't wait until that. Don't wait until the last moment. Do it before. And then at the same time, it's also a very opportune moment in the sense of possibilities. But it's very difficult to reach, you know, the final goal in those last moments. Okay, so now, I don't know if we talked about this before, but Mushi Musum, this is used on the debate ground. And it basically means, show me the four permutations of these two. So how it goes is in the monastery, a kid does this on the debate ground when they can't think of anything else to say. And they're buying time, and maybe they think of a serious question in the meantime. The first mu means tell me a kind of rebirth that is a good Penje Kile, but a bad Dzogche Kile. Good projecting karma, bad finishing karma. What do you guys think? Good projecting karma, bad finishing. So the projecting is like the main one. It determines where you're going to end up, what kind of being. Bad finishing is all the details. And then the bad finishing part.
And the sickness and aging.
Yes. Like, you'd have a human rebirth, but you're sick all the time. So that's one example. Or maybe you have a human rebirth, but you can't think clearly. Or a human rebirth where you live in poverty, where that's all you think about is, okay, well, how am I going to get my next meal? How am I going to afford to live? So you don't have time to think about the Dharma. Not that everyone who's in poverty is that, but it's a lot harder. Okay, and then now the next one, a bad Penje Kile and a good Dzogche Kile. What's an example of that? Bad projecting, good finishing. Yeah. I think that'd be an example. So this one is like... the example that's given is... you're born in the hell realms, but you're like... the Lord of the Hells. I don't really know exactly why that part is good, but that's the example given. So, you're born in the Hell Realm, but you're the boss. You're the boss of the Hells. And then another... And supposedly there is such a being as the Lord of Hell. And he has this terrible rebirth, but he's the big boss, and he decides what happens there. And the other example is the Nagas. Has anyone heard of the Nagas? According to Buddhism, there's a class of being that we can't see that have some kind of snake-like qualities. They're very intelligent. They have a lot of wealth. They can think and they can talk. And Master Nagarjuna went there and spoke to them and brought back scriptures, and that's why he was called Nagarjuna. Yeah.
Is it on a different planet?
A
different world?
I don't know. It says that it's a realm we can't see. Or no, it just says that it's a class of being that we can't see. So I don't know if it would be like some planet that we couldn't see, or if it's just a place that you can go if you have the karmic seeds. I think it could be right here, potentially. We just can't see it. Okay, so now the next one.
Wait, so why is that bad projecting, good
finishing? Why is it bad and good? I don't know exactly.
That's another example.
But this is the other scriptural example that's usually given. So, because I don't know that much about the Nagas, but maybe, this is just me guessing, but maybe it's something like the God Realm, where you have a lot of wealth, and but they're giving teachings. Master Nagarjuna went and got teaching, so they're practicing Dharma. Maybe it's something to do with being part snake. Because, I'm just thinking out loud, but you have to have a human form to reach Buddhahood. And so if you're part animal, it would seem like your inner body would be different and wouldn't be able to transform in the way that it needs to. But that's just my guess. Okay, so now, I don't know why there's a one there. Did I go backwards?
Yeah.
Nope. Just gave away the answer. Okay, so good projecting karma, good finishing. Human rebirth, and you become enlightened.
Is that a Buddha holding a little Buddha?
I think so, yeah. I didn't notice the little Buddha before. That's cute. Okay, and then the next one, bad projecting, bad finishing. What would be an example? Yep, that's what it is. Endless torment. Avicii hell is the lowest hell. Endless torment without stop.
Never get it out, or it's just a lot of time.
A lot of time. Like the torment while you're there is nonstop. There's not a break. Some of the hells you have a break. And then you're tortured again. And then I didn't want to leave the slides on the hell, so the last one, once you realize a certain level of the second path, which is the path of preparation, in which you think about emptiness and have a strong intellectual understanding, it's no longer possible to cut the root of virtue. So that's something that we can get through studying these things over and over, that it'll no longer be possible to cut our root of virtue. So at a certain point, we can't doubt karma or emptiness, et cetera, et cetera.
That's during the path of preparation or during the path
of preparation. Yeah. This is just in the notes. We've talked about it before, but it's... So if you're engaged in any activity with a group of people for the same common goal, like a war, for example, and someone else other than you, like a soldier at the front line, kill someone, all the people involved possess a full karmic path of action just as much as the one who killed. Even if you're just working in the office or you're behind the lines of fighting. So at the same time, the same line of reasoning applies to virtue, which is pretty cool. If you're involved in some virtuous group, some virtuous act, even if you're not the one who actually does it, you still get the full karmic path. And then we talk about how it's good to, you can cut that with the wars by writing to your congresswoman or your congressman or whoever it is and saying, I don't support my tax dollars going to war and to killing people. And, you know, it's not that you, because we have to live by the rules in our society. It's not that we all, you know, get indicted for tax evasion or something. It's that we do things in the way that we can within the realms of normal society, you know. So where we stay safe, but we're also saying, I don't agree with this. I don't condone my taxes going to this. I don't support killing. And I'm not willing to take the full karmic hit for what my country's doing. So that's a way that you can get around that. And I've done that a few times. I should maybe do it again.
How many times do you do it? I mean, how often would you see me doing that?
I would say, as with most practices, do it again if it feels like it's worn out or if it's time to do it again. Like, oh, I haven't done that in a while. I think that I should do that again. I wouldn't say there's like a prescribed set of time to do it. And usually I've just heard that you just need to do it once, but for me it seems like it'd be a little more powerful to do it a few times. And this is, I think this one's kind of like a touchy subject in our society because, and I've thought this too, because we think that if we're not condoning killing, that we're like, what's the word? That like we're condemning everyone who's gone to war in our country, period. Which for most of us is a lot of our families. For sure, grandparents. I don't know why it seems like every grandpa's gone to war. It was like what everyone did in that time, I guess. So it's not exactly that, because it feels really strongly linked to us, I think because of the society we live in, where it's so ingrained that war is a big thing that we do, and that's how we stay safe. That sort of thing. It's like, and there's also a thing where people don't appreciate veterans and they get treated terribly when they get back. And it's not like me saying I do not support the war means I support other beings being mistreated. It's not the same thing. So there's a way that it's separate.
But sometimes historically, we've been to war to help another country out, or and that's so it's happened quite a bit. Like we're coming to the aid of another country, so we're trying to help them and do a, you know, a good thing. But I mean, I don't know.
So it's a. So what would the motivation be in that instance?
What do you mean?
Like, is the motivation virtuous or not?
When you have like. Each other, we came into help, and then it kind of turned into our war, and then, you know.
So the motivation, if it's to help, is virtuous. Like, I really, if that's what it is, if it's truly that, if it's truly I want to help this country, and then the way that we're doing it is misguided. So it's, if we're able to help the country, so say helping the country is good. Could it be the result of doing something bad?
Yeah.
It couldn't, because only good comes from good. Good can only come from good. If it looks like we're doing something bad in the moment and something good comes from it, it's not working that way. The goodness came from something good that we did in the past. And the negative that we're planting is going to ripen in the future. Like in our buildings getting bombed or something like that. Because we have this sort of example in our society now. And we didn't before. So that's why karma is really confusing, because it's like we did this bad thing and it looks like something good came from it, but that's not how it works. You plant a seed, it ripens later. It's not ripening immediately, and that's why working with karma is really confusing. So by me saying, I can say I do not support killing, I don't support my tax dollars going to this, and at the same time, I can say I do support these people that are giving their life in the way that they think is good to help their country. I don't support how they're doing it, but I see, like, they're another human being that I love and care for, just like my friends, my family, you know, even politicians that we don't that we don't agree with. So it's not that I'm condemning this person. I'm saying this action I don't agree with. What's going on in there? It's with war, I think it's a really tricky one.
Yeah.
It feels really tricky to me, and it has for years. And we haven't really, I haven't been in a class where we've talked about it that much to really get like a deeper understanding of it. But like, do we have the biggest military in the world?
Yes.
No, China
does. So second biggest, probably. I'm guessing close.
Like manpower, like individuals, they have more people than we do.
But ours is the most powerful.
Most powerful, yeah.
So I kind of think that that's partly why it's hard to wrap my mind around this one, because it's so ingrained in our culture that this is how we do things, and it's just a big part of our world. Like I wonder what percentage of people have served in the military actually. But it's not like, it's not a foreign idea to us. It's like very close to home, and maybe our parents too, or our brothers, sisters, that sort of thing. We might have people that are in the military. So that one's it's a little trickier because it's a finer point. I don't support you going and killing other beings, but I support you as a person, and I see that your intention, however twisted it is to help. So there is that way. And then there, just like with anything, there's maybe people who are in the military who enjoy killing other people. That's why they're there. It's possible too. And it's a way that they can, I don't know, do it legally. Something like that. You know, like, it's not saying that everyone has an altruistic motivation. Some people feel like they want to go and blow up some bad guys. So in there, it's still mixed. And that's why, like, everything we do in samsara is mixed karma, because it's really difficult to have a completely pure motivation. There's always some little self-cherishing in there for the most part. And that pure part is really powerful, and it plants a seed that grows way bigger. So it's still a really good thing when we do something good.
Right.
So
I guess you can take one example and talk about it for hours.
Yeah, and I think that's, I do think that's a really hard one. And I haven't, like, how I'm explaining it, it doesn't completely land with me. It's like almost there, but I'm not sure what it is that's missing. Yeah. And at the same time, when we learn and study karma, we're supposed to use it and apply it to ourselves. We have way more than enough going on in our lives. We don't need to worry about what anyone else is doing in a certain way. Like, karmically, we don't need to then take our understanding and then judge all the war veterans in a certain way. It's just, it's not really helpful. Is it true that the killing is going to bring death and suffering to those people and to us if we're supporting it? Yes, it's true. Does it mean that we judge and, yeah, I think condemn is a good word, that we judge and like hate those people and push them away? It doesn't, but that, it's a really hard line to walk, I think. It's just like, someone, it's misguided, but it's like someone who's starving and they go and steal food. So any food or any nutrition comes from giving it in the past. If they get it from stealing, it's not coming from that. It would have come another way if it was meant, if it was going to come. That stealing just planted a seed in the future for to not have enough. You know, so it's planting the same seed. So we're trying to, by killing, if the motivation is protecting or, probably protecting, by causing harm to another, you're ensuring that harm is going to be caused to you. So you're planting the same exact seed that you're trying to fix in a wrong way. And it's on a smaller scale, we're doing this all day long. We're not going around and killing people. So that's a good thing, because that's a big karmic negativity that we're not doing. But in little ways, we're doing that same thing all day. Every time we get angry at someone, when they're angry at us, we're going to ensure that anger is going to come to us again. Every time we're jealous of someone else, we're solidifying that habit. When I have other people be jealous of me, I'm going to feel jealousy. So unknowingly, we're just planting the same thing when we're trying to get away from something. We don't have enough, we take something from someone else, that ensures that we don't have enough again. So we end up in this circle, like this endless circle. And there is a way where we can think, where we can just feel like a deep sadness that this is the twisted way that the world works. That we go to war in order basically to get protection, which is, it's the exact opposite. It's going to plant the seeds for harm to come to us, to come to our country. It's not doing what we think it's doing. And we've had this conversation. It doesn't mean that, we live in this messed up world. It's like this now. So in a way, we have to work with it as it is. But ultimately, it's completely messed up. It's completely backwards. And that's why we're all so stuck in the cycle of suffering. And so that's what we're learning, is how to cut that and get out of it. It's not easy to practice, but we can start with smaller things that are easier. And then we gain some momentum and we gain some faith in how it's working. We test it out for ourselves. And then over time, we can start to apply it to bigger things, and it makes more sense just through practicing it. So, yeah. Anyone else have anything they want to say? But what we're talking about is it could also be doing some big virtue and dedicating it to that. Thinking of all the good deeds that His Holiness does. You get a certain percentage of that merit. So the highest being you can think of. Or, doing the biggest good deed you could possibly think of and dedicating it to purifying whatever anger it was that happened. So that would be a part of the four powers. It'd be the third step. Yeah. Okay. Let's end with prayers. Puki Chuk Shing Me Tok Trum Rirab Ling Shin Yen De Gen Padi S Sangye Shingju Mikte Uwagi Jokun Amdak Shingla Chuparsho Yidam Guru Radna Mandalakam Niryatayami Di Gewoku Sunam Yeshe Soksokshin Sunam Yeshe Lejumwe Dampa Kuni Toparsho.